And I think we are recording. There we go. Hello! And this is episode 8, I think, of the Perverted Negress podcast with Jean-Patrick Robichaud.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, everyone.
Good thing, y'all. So I want to jump right into it because we had an awesome diversion after the last discussion call thing. We were talking about whether or not unshared kinks, where there was a the Venn was not completely overlapping when it came to people in a couple's in a coupled relationship having their kink needs met by that person. And then towards the end, we were talking about the difference between having a kink that requires that sexually satisfies you versus kinks that don't, which is interesting because there's so many different takes on this as to whether or not BDSM is in BDSM kink, leather, all those interactions are intrinsically tied to your sexuality or are part of it or are outside of it or some combination of all of those. And there are so many schools of thought on it. And I thought it was interesting when you were saying, well, I understand that maybe, your sexual satiation is not connected with it, but, then again, you maybe don't because there's, in my mind, the whole point of it is that people come to it as part of their sexuality. And that's sort of the overarching motivation.
Yeah, and I think people do come to it as a part of their sexuality, but I don't think they, without exception, come to it as a part of their sexuality. I think that this, I think that sexuality and a pull towards an alternate sexuality is one of the main inroads into kink. I guess, but I don't necessarily think it's the only one. And part of what I wanted to, I guess, differentiate the last time around was the difference between something being sexually satiating and erotically satiating. And I am kind of, I think I've spoken myself into a bit of a corner because in using those two, well, in using those two terms, I haven't necessarily, I don't have a clear definition to differentiate those two terms. But when I say them, I think of them as being different.
Right. Well, I would say that maybe it's a difference between, sexuality and pornography. There's the idea of it being explicit. There's the idea of it being personal. There's the idea of it being something that is of a personal and grounded and and me-centric. I don't know what other I could use another word, but that's the word that popped to mind first, which I would identify or associate very closely with eroticism versus sexuality, right? Like, I can masturbate and that's a sexual act, right? That's really great. I don't necessarily see masturbation as this amazing expression of my own deeply erotic self for me. I do see any sexual act that I conduct in the presence of or with someone else I really care about as having an intrinsic eroticism that could be sexual. I don't know. I see that there is a difference. I think maybe I'm not sure that that's the main question that I have around SM is something that has I get okay, I'm gonna rewind and start again. What I think I'm thinking of when I hear this question is my life as a kinky person something that has an intrinsic sexual value and nature to it, or does it exist outside of a purely sexual act? For example, if I am submitting to someone and they are like, get me a sandwich, and I get them a sandwich and I feel good because I have performed good service, versus they say, get me a sandwich, and I'm immediately turned on because I have received an order. And I spend the whole time making the sandwich, focusing on how much making the sandwich turns me on. And then I present the sandwich and I'm like all flushed and hot and horny because I have just done something that is an extension of my sexuality because submission turns me on and because I just submitted. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I'm trying to figure out if I feel like there is.
Now that, I really want a sandwich.
Yeah, I know.
This is like I wasn't even hungry.
Yeah. And it's like what's happening with me right now is that I'm torn between there's part of me that wants a sandwich and there's another part of me that just wants somebody to bring me a sandwich. I can tell just by looking at her that it's not going to be Coco. But to move away from that, I feel to move away from the pipe dream that is a sandwich.
Is Coco bringing you a sandwich?
Coco bringing me a sandwich. And what's amazing is that when I said that, she's looking at me right now, and there's a look on her face that is really like, "You've got to be fucking kidding me." I'm just gonna go back to cleaning myself.
Like, first of all, no opposable thumbs, bitch. Second of all,
right.
Get your own damn sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. Make your own damn sandwich.
She's like, in fact, make me a sandwich.
My bowl's a little empty. She could do something about that. But I wanted to talk about so the reward that comes from doing service, let's say. Mm-hmm. To continue with the sandwich analogy, even though it's just going to make us both want a sandwich even more. to receive a request for a sandwich, there's option A, where you go, you make the sandwich to the best of your ability, you bring the sandwich to the person who requested the sandwich, and you feel a kind of task satisfaction.
Right.
Option B is you receive the directive to go make me a sandwich. Immediately you are flushed and tingling. You go to make the sandwich. It's relatively hard to concentrate because, oh my goodness, all you want to do is lie down on the ground, rub one out really quickly, assuming you are permitted. Finish making the sandwich, bring it to the person who requested the sandwich, deliver it, and then have five or six little rolling mini orgasms on your way back to wherever you're doing because, oh my God, making sandwiches are so fucking hot. Now, here's the question for me. I can't believe I just spun that little scenario out of my brains. But here's the question for me. That option A, that the feeling of satisfaction from a task well done can be erotic without being sexual.
Okay, so what is the difference there for you? This is where the rubber meets the road, baby.
This is where I'm still trying to define. This is where I'm still trying to define my terms. And if you'll permit me to do a little bit of conversational carving, which I don't generally like to do, I'd rather build a conversation as opposed to carve it. that there is something about. There is a. Okay, if we can talk about the erotic as being a positive body feeling that isn't necessarily grounded in the sexual.
Huh.
I try to use the analogy of, or like right now, what I want to do is I want to use the analogy of calling a show. Mm-hmm. Because of my history as a stage manager, the moments in my life not connected to kink where I have felt the most, where I have felt a significant amount of physical pleasure and enjoyment that I wouldn't consider to be sexual, but I would consider it to be charged.
That's super cool. So I'm sorry, I'm just like, yeah, totally getting that.
Comes from when I would call a perfect show.
For those who do not know what stage managers do, and shouts out to them because Jesus Christ, is make all the stuff that you see on stage that you don't fucking think about happen. So anytime a light changes, anytime a piece of scenery moves, anytime an actor goes somewhere, the stage manager is orchestrating that, monitoring that, ensuring quality control on that. And the power that they possess is to the point where if they make announcements on stage, the device that they utilize to do that is called the God mic. That's how intense stage management is. And so, you know, you talk to any actor worth their salt. This is like my litmus test for like how you know an actor is a douche or not. There's many, but how they treat and how they talk about stage managers. If they're not instantly reverent and worshipful, then they need to fucking go back to school because Jesus Christ. So this is what stage managers are doing. It's an incredibly high pressure job. And it's one of those invisible ones. It's also part of the reason why in most small theaters you will see the cast at the end of the show point to the booth where the stage managers are working, because we're like, yeah, yeah, we're getting the applause. Let us divert a few claps to the motherfuckers in the booth.
Yeah, if you're ever in an audience and it looks like the actors on stage during the curtain call are pointing towards the back of the theater,
yeah,
they're pointing at us. They're pointing at stage managers as a recognition of the work that we do. And it's interesting that you use the word invisible, because I always felt like if I was doing my job as a stage manager correctly, nobody should ever notice it.
Right. Like it's invisible and omnipotent.
Yes, there is a certain amount of that kind of laughter coming in. And it always killed me, because my parents would come and see, not every show that I did, because some of them were just too fucking weird to bring my parents. but every so often my parents would come to see a show, and either my mother or my father would say after the show was over, well, that was very well managed. And I recognized that they were trying to be sweet.
Yeah.
But if they noticed it, it was bad. But anyway, as a stage manager, I called some amazingly complex shows. And generally speaking, not only was I calling shows, but I usually operated lights or sound, or sometimes lights and sound. So I was calling and running a couple of
running the boards
at the same time, because I liked the feeling of being able to play the show. It wasn't just about looking at a book and when the actor said, I know that I can use the shorthand with you,
but I
have to recognize that there are people who are listening who won't necessarily know what I'm talking about. Like, so when a stage manager
loves someone very, very much.
Very, very much. and even that in itself is amazingly rare. Stage managers don't tend to have a lot of love in them. Or if they do.
You can't, man. You can't show weakness.
They only have it for a very short amount of time. It's usually about the first 6 months after getting out of theater school, assuming they make it that long. When a stage manager is running a show for a night, they have what's called the book. The book is the script of the play, and notated in the script are all of the lighting cues, sound cues, physical change cues. Sometimes there are actor entrances and exits.
Also known as the Bible. Let us see how, like, we have a whole stream of analogies here.
Exactly. and generally speaking, what will happen is you'll have the line, you'll have the cue points will be based on a line. So, I'm trying to think of a good, it's funny, I had so much stuff memorized and I'm totally blanking now.
Now you're just like, I don't know, I can't think of a single cue.
Yeah. O Sir Contenti, I follow him to serve my turn upon him, go. that would be that I follow him to serve my turn upon him. In the book there would be a little flag that would say go on it, and if a stage manager wasn't able to run any of the boards, they would just have the book open in front of them. And they would be following along with the lines. And when that actor said, turn upon him, the stage manager would say, lights go.
And the lighting and person would then
the button. Right. For me, the real enjoyment that I got as a stage manager was not having another operator, having one hand on a lighting board, one hand on a soundboard, and being able to play the show. And by that, I mean, feel what the actors were doing with the line, and that gave me a little bit of leeway in having the lighting cue or sound cue happen a beat earlier, a beat later, right? It was more of a connection with what was happening on stage. And that made it, in a sense, more invisible. What I was doing was more invisible because mm-hmm. it was natural. It flowed from what the It flowed from what was happening on stage, not from the word in the line.
Right. And I'm shocked that as a dominant type person, you prefer that degree of control. It's really surprising to me.
Right? Who the fucking thunk it? it would be interesting, actually. I know for a fact that there is a large that there are lots of theater type folk inside of the kink community,
and vice versa.
Yes, but I'd be very curious to run some kind of a report to see how many stage managers find themselves in D-type situations, or how many D-types naturally gravitate towards something like stage management.
I would think you would have a lot of dominance and a lot of people who identify as slaves.
Well, that's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, because you have the service aspect of it, and you have the fact that many people who identify as slaves aren't submissive, but are very much attuned to service and making shit happen. Mm-hmm. And that is a remarkably astute and awesome sort of take on what stage management is, you know. In addition to the people who are dominant, who are just like, no, I just need to run all the shit because that's how it's going to go best, you know. And that to me is one of the most interesting aspects of DS relationships, is that you have so many people who are so similar in their desires to make shit happen, but they approach it in different ways. You know,
yes.
And so I think about people who are stage management, and as I roll back over the years, I will say I don't think I know any person who has been a stage manager that I've worked with who's not at least a little bent. Mm-hmm. And I'm scrolling. I hope I'm not outing anybody here by doing this right now. They're like, oh my God, I worked with her, and now everyone knows I'm a pervert. But I will say generally, like when the conversation of my life comes around, like I'll get a couple of like winks and nudges from stage management, like, oh yes, and I'm like, oh really? Not shocked at all, you fucking perv. There could be some correlation there because of you just have people being drawn to that, or it could just be that like people have discovered that kind of power, like you said, turns them on.
Right. So thank you for bringing it back to that, because that's an interesting part. It's like I never. Okay, hang on. See, this is one of those times when having real aversion to speaking in absolute language can trip me up.
Just do it.
What I was going to say was, I've never been aroused calling a show. Mm-hmm. But now I'm thinking back going, is that actually true? Have I been sitting alone in the booth during a show with wood? Like, that could... Because there's a part of my brain that thinks that could very well have happened.
Yeah.
That could very easily have happened.
Yeah.
But the essential hit for me of calling an excellently smooth show, it made my brain fire off in all kinds of really lovely and happy-making ways. It made me feel good. It made me feel right. Like, mm-hmm. It felt it's what I should be doing. It was amazingly rewarding, and it wasn't rewarding in somebody else coming up to me and saying, "My goodness, that was good." Right?
Right.
It's not the kind of reward hit that, let's say, an actor gets from being on stage after the show is over, where not only do they know that they've nailed it, but they go out on stage for the curtain call, and the audience is just throwing them love.
Right. Right. Right.
As a stage manager, nobody ever threw me any love, but I still got,
aww.
I know it's a sad face, but nobody is an incorrect way of saying it. I got actually a significant amount of love from all of the wonderful people that I was able to actually work with.
Right. But it wasn't like public announcing of the love. Yeah.
It wasn't adoration in the same way. There was a significant amount of respect and gratitude, mm-hmm. but there wasn't the kind of adoration that we tend to put towards people who were on stage.
Right. Well, there's a different degree of vulnerability, right? You are a step away.
Totally.
If you blow a cue, we know it, but you know, unless it is Miss Saigon, and the helicopter doesn't show up, like by and large, people are not going to know if like if a cue is blown. So afterwards, you come up, you're like, dude, what happened? Act two, where yeah. was that? So where was the train whistle? You're just like, ah, sorry, I totally fucked it up. Versus you flub a line, you trip down a flight of stairs, you know, your pants fall down, whatever, on stage, everyone sees that. Yeah. But what I find really interesting about that is, again, it plays back to the amount of vulnerability inherent in being in control versus being controlled, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. there is something to be said for the idea that the person on stage is not necessarily in that much control of the larger sort of of their environment. That is pretty much what the stage manager's job is, to make sure that the environment is consistent with, you know, what we plan to do. And so
right.
all that is going on and that's happening. And the actor jumps up and is like, da-da-da, I'm doing this stuff. Da-da-da-da-da. And isn't that great? The need for accolades and adoration and all that sort of stuff is interesting, because there's certainly a school of thought in DS relationships where the slave or submissive type person should not necessarily rely on accolades and head pats from their dominant type person in order to gain that satisfaction, which is a thing I have a very mixed feeling about, because on the one hand, I absolutely agree, you cannot rely on someone else to provide your ultimate core support. You really have to be doing it for yourself. You know, you have to be slaving away, you have to be doming away, whatever it is, because it's a need and a thing you have to do. However, taken to its extreme, which of course perverts do, that idea that submission and service is its own reward, then there are people who think that that absolves them from the responsibility to acknowledge, to pat on the head, to correct, to guide, to be present for the reception of that service, which makes me a bit fucking nuts.
Right. Well, and this gets back to something that we had talked about before too, which is the idea of how to accept service with grace.
Yeah, and how to not be a dick about acknowledging the service.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, because I had this discussion on, I put something on FetLife that blew up, and there were all these people responding to it. And there was this question about whether or not dominance needed to acknowledge something. I think it was a list of like 5 tips for dominance or something. I will see if I can find that. But then there were these, you know, two slaves who came onto the thread saying, my master should never have to acknowledge my service because I am his property, and it's not as though his car, you know, needs to be thanked for getting him from point A to point B. And, you know, if you are truly in service, it is not about your getting pats on the head. It is about you knowing that you have done a job and doing so with grace and blah, blah. And I'm like, that's fantastic. But do not make those of us who need the applause and the pats on the head less valuable as slaves. You know, and this is something with which I have struggled for a very long time, because in my relationships, for various reasons, because people seem to think that suddenly I'm going to become some monster of arrogance, that they need to diminish focusing on my achievements and things I have done. And this has been a consistent issue with me throughout all of my relationships, which is fascinating. And it makes me nuts, because there's a point where I, you know, I need the fucking applause. And I'm really upfront about it at this point. I'm like, I need you to tell me I did a great job. I need you to say you're proud of me. I have to hear it. In the same way that I think it's very important for me to demonstrate my gratitude for the environment that you are providing for me to provide that service in, you know, and mm-hmm. do not make it so that my style, my style of slavery is less slavey than the person who, you know, sits quietly in the corner with their eyes downcast, and God forbid you should thank them because that just embarrasses them. Those people have their style of submission and slavery, and other people have a different style. It's just...
Well, it's... I mean, everybody does have their own style, right? No one way is necessarily going to work for anybody
exactly.
other than the person who's talking about that particular way. Maybe you'll have people for whom something that's very, 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 very close works.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never going to be exactly the same because you're two different people. And so I think the only reason that somebody would say this is the way that it should happen is because it gives them a sense of comfort to know that they're doing it right.
Yeah.
And the only way that they can know that they're doing it right is if other people do it the same way as well.
And so, other people are not doing it right if they don't do it that way. And God forbid, the other person's way seems more fun. You know, this is the like the zero sum fun problem with a lot of service stuff. It's like, well, if you're enjoying it, then it's not really service. If you're yeah. loving it, I'm just like, what the fuck? You know, okay, there is something to be said for the ordeal and the suffering, but if that's your main diet and that's not what you want, that's going to wear thin real fast, like super fast.
Not to say that there's such a sometimes a negative stigma around words like play and fun.
Yeah.
That I think are dangerous. I think the fact that they have this negative stigma is dangerous. I think that it can make people for whom kink is fun question if it should be fun. Because there are those people for whom it is amazingly serious.
Right.
But amazingly serious in a way that is devoid of fun. And then there are those people for whom it is amazingly serious, but it is full of fun and play. And there's lots of contemporary theory around play and games that point out how valuable engaging in play, playing games, how valuable that is for human development, for brain development.
Yeah.
And how the separation between work and play, or between work and fun, or between the serious and fun, can actually be really damaging. Like play doesn't have to be pointless. Play can actually be very serious and have it still constitute as play. Something can be super important to you and be fun. Like those dichotomies, it doesn't have to be one or the other. It can all be included in one experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it has to be. And we're entering the 3 minute, 3.5 minute rap zone. Cause okay. of course, you know, it's half an hour is ridiculous, but I agree. And I will add to that my enthusiastic yes. And I will also say that part of what's important in the fact that we use those terms is to underscore the fact that they're part of human development. Kids play in order to make brain cell connections happen, in order to create learned experiences, in order to integrate themselves socially with other children and with their parents and with the other adults with whom they come into contact. So to think that that's not a vital part of our development as people who are doing something kinky sex that at some point has, you know, sexual and or erotic and or very charged facets to it. So the idea that we are playing in that realm, I think, is really valuable. There is SM that is work. There is work to the relationship, and you can't overestimate, you can't overstate how valuable that is. But you also can't overstate how valuable it is to enjoy it and to have fun. The idea of the whole thing always being an ordeal bums me out a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. And while there is a gravity and there is a seriousness and there is that weight to it, hopefully the weight is balanced by the enjoyment and the joy and the closeness that is brought about by having those joyous moments, by enjoying the service, by getting the pat on the head, by hearing that you've done a good job. And let me, you know, wave my hand in the air for bottom and submissive and slave types to also acknowledge to the people who are topping them or owning them when they're doing awesome work. You know, like when you are really getting the good stuff, when things are going really well, it's often easy to forget to say, hey, you know, sir, ma'am, owner, type person, trainer, that was awesome. You're super fun and awesome. Yay.
Yes. One quick thing before we run out of time. I know it's getting really close, but I would love to have people who are listening to this podcast right now send us examples of the way that fun or play, notions of fun or play, has improved your kink.
Word. Super awesome. And I will add that to the little show notes here so that Sweet. I can be like, hey, tell us about why things are fun. So right. Thank you so much for listening. You guys are awesome. And we will be back soon with something fantastic and I need to like have a thing to close the show because this sort of like wandering on.